You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
The closing of auto plants has been a significant indication of American deindustrialization, and there's no place where that's more evident than in Detroit. Paul Clemens, who was born and raised in the Motor City, investigates the auto plant closings with a focus on what happened at the Bud Company stamping plant on Detroit's east side in his new book called Punching Out. It's published by Doubleday, and it's my pleasure to welcome Paul Clemens to our show today. Hello.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
When you were growing up in Detroit, did you have family and friends who worked in the auto industry?
Well, everyone more or less does. Everything's connected to auto. There's an old saying that if GM gets a cold, Detroit gets pneumonia. Mm-hmm. But my father's a car guy. My uncle is a car guy. They didn't work for the big three, but, you know, they worked for places that did auto work.
Like the Bud Company.
Which was a supplier
to the two of the big threes.
Yeah. I mean, there's the big three, and then there's tier one suppliers, and then there's small machine shops and so on that supply them, tool and die shops. It's a sort of industrial ecosystem.
Well, now Detroit is more famous as a place where people talk about ruin porn. It's become a favorite subject for artists and tourists. How are the decaying buildings viewed by the people who've been most affected by the loss of all of the jobs?
It's something I'm a little bit ambivalent about. I understand why people who are not from Detroit and visit the city are struck by these buildings. They're amazing, and they're not typical. You can't really find them just anywhere. On the other hand,
to some degree, it almost feels like you're looking at Roman ruins or something. They're both impressive and depressing.
Yeah, so it's understandable. People are so impressed by them. But it's a bit of a sore point, I think, in the region because there are some good things going on. What I try to do in this book is put a human face on that. With so-called ruin porn, there's this sense that all these old abandoned plants and factories are sort of indistinguishable. And what I tried to do was tell a specific story about one of them, not as a ruin, but as how it got to be emptied out. So that's why I began with the closing and went through the emptying out process.
Although it's not only plants. I just heard a report the other day about a famous high school that was closed, and now there's a big debate over whether to try to convert it into housing or something else or just tear it down.
Well, a lot of that's tied to population loss. You know, you have a lot of infrastructure that's no longer necessary because residents have left over the 5-6 decades.
How many plants in Detroit have been closed?
Several. I mean, it depends if you're talking about the city specifically or the Tri-County region or the state. It was important to me that this plant be in the city of Detroit, which it is.
Well, people have lost jobs, but haven't the unions negotiated generous retirement packages?
Yeah, but in fairness, the UAW took concessions in the last round of negotiations with the big three. I think that was in the fall of 07. Both sides, I think, realized, even though it didn't forestall the bankruptcies in a couple of cases, that what was going on might not have been sustainable.
If you retire, do you still get retirement?
That depends.
It different if they close a plant and you just lose your job?
That depends on the plant and the negotiations. I worked with a guy at the UAW local that represented the Bud plant, UAW Local 306.
Ray.
Ray, who's a terrific fellow. And that's where the book begins. That's how I first get into the plant days before it closed. I go in with Ray Dishman.
And he is very busy after the Bud plant closes.
Sure. I mean, he was the benefit rep. And what I wanted in the book was a sort of ground level description of the kind of conversations he was having with employees who were obviously very concerned about what benefits do I get? Should I take the buyout as opposed to the medical and so on? And that's sort of a preamble to the book. The main body of the book is what happens after it closes, but Ray's in there leading up to the closing.
Well, in many cases, if you lose a job, they close a plant, you assume you'll get something somewhere else. But that's been a big problem in Detroit.
Yeah, I mean, there's a quote in the book where Ray's talking to somebody on the phone, and then he hangs up and he talks to me, and he says, you know, people are taking the money instead of the medical if his or her spouse works for Chrysler. Well, of course, he said that a couple of years before the Chrysler bankruptcy. You know, when I began the book, I should say I didn't know that there would be the bankruptcies. I didn't know that the Great Recession would begin and so on. All of that was sort of, it's in the periphery of the book, but it just happened to work out that way.
Well, these places like the Bud plant survived the Great Depression, but they were closing before this current recession.
Yeah, I mean, Bud, I should say, was built in 1919 by Liberty Motors. And, you know, a lot of early car companies in Detroit didn't make it, just like a lot of startups in tech fields or whatever don't make it.
So Liberty was actually a producer of cars?
Yeah. And the plant was built in 1919. And then the Bud Company, which was founded in Philadelphia, bought the plant in 1925. So
And what did they manufacture there?
Now nothing, but over the years.
What did they?
Well, the plant's claim to fame is that's where the body of the 1950s Ford Thunderbird was stamped and assembled. It's hard to find a more iconic car in America's or Detroit's 20th century than the Ford T-Bird.
So they stamped car bodies.
Chrysler. They did a lot of things over the years. It was referred to as the Mini Rouge. You know, the Ford Rouge is sort of the iconic American factory, and it did everything. And the Bud was referred to as the Mini Rouge. They stamped and assembled bodies. That was the stamping part of it. Bud often went by the name Bud Wheel because they had a wheel division that made wheels and brake drums and so on. So there were many things it did over the year. There's a foundry that closed in the early 70s. It was a mini Ford Rouge.
How big was it?
At its peak, I think employment approached 10,000. I don't think it ever reached it, but it came close. But that's going back many decades.
Well, cars are still being made and stamped. Why was it being closed?
The Bud Company was purchased in the late 70s by the German steelmaker Thyssen, which merged with Krupp in the early part of the century. And I guess Bud was no longer viewed as an asset to the company.
It wasn't profitable anymore?
I don't know. I mean, you'd have to ask Thyssen Krupp.
So what does closing a plant mean and look like?
Well, that's the subject of the book. And I had no idea. And I think as a writer, it's beneficial to lead with your own ignorance because the sense of discovery that you feel, hopefully you can convey that to the reader. And that's what I wanted to know. I wanted to know where the equipment went, where the people went, who was buying it, why they were buying it. And that's the story, to the best of my ability, that I tracked.
Was the equipment all still usable?
No. A lot of the equipment was scrapped, but some of the big press lines were sold abroad. One of the lines, Tuline, was shipped to Brazil. Another line was shipped to Central Mexico, which was a Ford SUV line. It did stampings for the Lincoln Navigator, the Ford Expedition and Explorer. That went to a Gestamp plant in Mexico.
A worker named Dwayne had some interesting thoughts about the future of some of the Bud plant's machinery in Mexico.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of my favorite passages in the book. And I think it's tonic that what he says sort of cuts against stereotypes about working class reaction or resentment. He's got a very moving speech in there where he talks about how we being the crew, taking great care to take these presses apart so that they can go to Mexico and support Mexican workers and Mexican families the same way they supported workers in Detroit for decade after decade.
He said he hoped that Mexican families might now benefit as much as his had. It's why we were taking such care of taking this thing down. So were the same people who had worked in the plant the ones who were taking it apart?
No. There were two guys who worked at Bud who were on the crew. But by and large, it was guys who, some of them were ex-UAW who had taken buyouts. One guy had worked at the Ford Rouge who was a crew leader later in the process. But, you know, it's the same skill set. The book is filled with ironies. One of the ironies is that the skill set, the sort of muscle memory that it's been built up over decades in Detroit, is now being used not to make things, but in this case at Bud, the story I was telling, it's being used to take apart the things that had made things.
Paul Clemens's book is called Punching Out, 1 Year in a Closing Auto Plant. It is published by Doubleday, but it seems people came from other places to help disassemble the plant.
Well, it was
you talk about the Arkansas boys, and you note that a bunch of white men are taking apart these factories in a predominantly black area. Was there discrimination in the hiring process?
Oh, no. I mean, that's in there simply to set the context.
Black men in the area had worked at the plant.
Oh, sure. But
I gather you got more pay for taking it apart than you did when you were working at it.
Well, that's one of the ironies that's in the book as well. I think when the UAW in fall of 07 renegotiated, new hires into the big three were going to make half of what current workers were making. I think it went from like $28 an hour to $14 an hour. So, yeah, one of the ironies is that you could make more taking apart a plant at that point than you could working in one.
You had written a book earlier about race in Detroit.
Well, it wasn't solely about race, but it's difficult to write about Detroit without writing about that topic. It's embedded into the.
Well, how does it apply here in this in the situation is of disassembling.
I don't see that it does in a black and white way. But there were people from all over the world in there. There were Mexican engineers, Brazilians. So it's a diverse cast of characters. On any given day, you would hear Portuguese in the plant. You'd hear Spanish. You'd hear German, various American dialects. So it was a diverse crew.
If the jobs are disappearing because the plants are closing, are people leaving Detroit at the same rate?
Well, I think the census data that came out a couple weeks ago indicated that Michigan was the only state in the union between 2000 and 2010 that had lost population.
Is there anything optimistic to say about Detroit?
Sure. Yeah. You can't say one thing that's totalizing about Detroit. Detroit's 139 square miles and it contains multitudes. And if you're talking about Detroit, the metropolitan region, you know, it's even bigger than that. 4 million people live there. So you can't just say this is a story about Detroit. This is one story about Detroit. Midtown Detroit seeing great growth. People are moving back to that area. So this is just one part of Detroit. These things aren't in contradiction. They fill out the larger picture.
But what made Detroit a major city was the manufacturing.
That's right.
And that's all going. You seem to be suggesting that these closing auto plants signify a change in the American work ethic.
Well, I'm saying that the type of work that's available to Americans of a certain socioeconomic strata is changing. That's no news. People know that. What I'm trying to do is to put that in a narrative that shows it rather than telling it.
Is America shooting itself in the foot by not trying to keep manufacturing going here?
Well, I mean, American manufacturing, it depends what you're looking at. If you're just looking at in terms of output, I think American manufacturing is doing better and is quite healthy. The difference is you don't need the people that you once did. That's both technological and it's also the fact that others...
Because these plants are now largely robotic.
Sure. And so you have that working in tandem with the more global nature of manufacturing. And I think those two things working in tandem are what's pinching the American industrial working class. There was a great saddening graph in Bloomberg Businessweek, their year in review issue of about 3 weeks ago. And it was just two graphs side by side. And 9.8% was the official unemployment rate. It's obviously higher than that, but that was the official unemployment rate, 9.8. And 9.3%, that was the number of Americans working in manufacturing. So there are more unemployed Americans than there are Americans working in manufacturing.
Is there a lot of vandalism here and theft as these plants are being closed?
Yeah, I mean, that's been a problem at plants all over, not just in Detroit, but people try to get what they can out of these places. It's understandable.
So what does the plant look like now?
Well, it's emptied out now. And what I wanted to do, you mentioned ruin porn earlier, was not take pictures of an empty plant. I wanted to describe the process by which it becomes empty. And that took about a year. And I detailed that as best I could.
A listener writes, how much of the technology was actually useful? Wasn't one of the factors in the decline of the U.S. auto industry that the Japanese and Koreans made better use of the computer-aided manufacturing than U.S. companies did?
Yeah, I'm sure that's true. But not all the equipment in there, as I said earlier, was usable. A lot of it got scrapped. The price of scrap steel when all this was going on was quite high. So a lot of it was valuable simply as scrap. But others are making use of the equipment that was in there. It was not state of the art. One of the characters in the book says that this stuff is world class to the rest of the world. In America, it wouldn't be considered world class, but Brazilians and Mexicans are making use of it and producing parts with it.
One of the arguments against moving an industry out is that you have a large workforce that knows how to do this stuff.
Absolutely.
Is that being ignored in Detroit? Are there any people who are trying to hold back this trend?
Well, that's what I was referring to earlier when I talked about muscle memory. It's like you have this skill set on the part of tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people that's not being utilized as it once was for various reasons that we've touched on.
It's not only happening in Detroit. New York has lost most of its manufacturing capability. I imagine most of America's large cities have.
Sure.
The Northeast has suffered greatly.
You know, the book is... To me, the book is not necessarily about Detroit or this or auto. That's the book's setting. The book's subject is employment, particularly amongst working class Americans who previously worked in industry.
It could the decline of the blue collar worker.
Correct. I mean, this could have been set in a Pittsburgh steel mill or a Gary mill, or, you know, I'm from Detroit, so it happens to be set in this plant, which luckily for me was an iconic old plant on the east side of the city. But again, that's the setting. That's not the subject, as far as I'm concerned. The subject is, what do we do? The book has no thesis. There's nothing I'm trying to prove or disprove. The subtitle is 1 Year in a Closing Auto Plant. It's descriptive, not prescriptive, but I think there's value in that description. We see plant to close. That headline appears all the time. What happens then? That's what I'm trying to answer.
Paul Clemens' book is called Punching Out. It's published by Doubleday. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.